The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your jobs on all the top job sites. And now you can with ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your jobs to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. The fallout from the U.S. air attack in Syria as Russia reacts.
Putin considers the American strikes to be aggression against a sovereign state.
Plus,
the nomination of Neil M. Gorsuch of Colorado to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is confirmed.
Later, leaving behind family, friends, and the only life you've ever known.
For some, that comfort turns into a cage.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Russia's accusing the United States of violating international law in the air assault on a Syrian military base. But first, Sweden's on alert this weekend after a deadly terror attack in Stockholm. A hijacked truck rammed into a crowd of people at an upscale department store.
I saw 8 people get dragged over.
Reporter James Savage is in Stockholm.
The truck that was used in the attack, hijacked or stolen, belongs to a brewery. They have confirmed that the truck was stolen from one of its drivers.
Back to Syria on the centennial of the U.S. involvement in the First World War, the U.S. entered into another conflict Thursday, the Syrian Civil War.
I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched.
That chemical attack, believed to be sarin gas, launched by the Assad regime, killing dozens, including many women and children. American officials say the 59 cruise missiles launched by the U.S. were meant to deter future chemical attacks. Correspondent Cammie McCormick has more from the Pentagon.
The Tomahawk missiles hit an airbase where Syrian aircraft often take off to bomb targets in northern and central Syria. U.S. officials now say the Syrians did not scramble any of those planes in time to get away from these strikes, which also targeted airstrips. The missiles were fired from 2 U.S. Navy ships in the eastern Mediterranean and represent an escalation in the U.S. military's involvement in Syria, which until now has been confined to targeting ISIS.
Russia says it's beefing up military defenses for its ally, Syria. More from CBS News reporter Alec Loon in Moscow on how the Kremlin is reacting to the U.S. air assault.
President Vladimir Putin's spokesman said that Putin considers the American strikes to be aggression against a sovereign state, that Washington was trying to distract attention from casualties in Iraq, and that the attacks will significantly damage relations between Moscow and Washington.
Senior Pentagon officials say Russia's failed to control the Syrian government's use of chemical weapons. Let's talk now to CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. He's in Palm Beach, Florida, where President Trump is spending the weekend after a meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Stephen, let's start with how the White House has been framing this new U.S. military involvement in Syria, and how does it square with Congress?
Well, so far, the reaction has been mostly positive from members of both parties, although there are some who say that this is a step that the president should not have taken without congressional authorization. On the whole, most of the response from members of Congress has been strongly supportive of the president's decision. The press secretary says that this was a very decisive move on the part of the president, that Mr. Trump was deeply affected by the pictures he saw in the past week of the babies dying from sarin nerve gas, and he was compelled to respond.
How does this affect the U.S. relationship with Russia? Does it take a new turn?
Well, there were a lot of questions Friday morning about whether the United States and Russia would continue to work through what's called the deconfliction channel that exists between the Russian military and the American military, so that if there are missions going on in Syria to counter ISIS, that Russian planes don't wind up shooting down American planes and vice versa. And Press Secretary Spicer says most of the international community has been supportive of this. But there are still, of course, lingering questions. This is a decision that the president has undertaken without any congressional authorization, without any UN resolutions. The White House is citing the president's constitutional authority under Article 2, which says that he's commander-in-chief of the armed forces and has inherent power to order a strike like this. In his remarks to the country on Thursday night, the president said that he believed that it was in the vital national security interest of the United States to respond to the use of chemical weapons and to deter their future use.
And Stephen, this is kind of strange to think about, but this visit from the Chinese president to Mar-a-Lago was really pushed to the back burner. We barely saw him, right? But this is still important.
This much ballyhooed summit between the leaders of two of the most powerful nations in the world, right? We did see images of President Trump and President Xi sitting at horseshoe tables and on a couch side by side, but we have not learned a great deal about what it is they've discussed. The president said that he has made tremendous progress developing a relationship with Xi Jinping, that a lot of the problems, he said, that he foresaw in the relationship between the U.S. and China will go away as a result of this meeting.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy chatting with us from Palm Beach, Florida. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet, Steve.
Cliff Sims is special assistant to the president. Cliff, in President Trump's contract with the American voter, he promised to direct the Treasury to label China a currency manipulator within his first 100 days. Will that still happen?
Look, it's no secret that the United States and China have significant common interests and differences. And really, the president, I think, views this meeting as a first step, a significant step toward building a constructive and results-oriented relationship that's going to deliver great benefits and results for both countries. So that's what we're hoping for.
So how tough, then, will President Trump be with China, and will he label them a currency manipulator?
Regardless of how these things play out on any given issue, whether it's the currency issue or North Korea or whatever it may be, is the president is sitting there and is representing the interest of the American people first, foremost, end of discussion.
So it sounds like you can't commit that he'll follow through in this promise to label
them
as a...
I'm not going to get out in front of the president in terms of his negotiations on any range of issues.
Speaking about international policy, let's talk about North Korea. President Trump says China has done little to help. What specifically does the White House want China to do?
China is in a position, because of their relationship with North Korea and their proximity to North Korea, to help not only the United States, but the world community, the world at large, solve the issues that we continually deal with this regime in North Korea. And the president is going to look for them to step up and be a part of solving this challenge of North Korea. No question about it.
Cliff, I also want to ask you about the White House's reaction to another issue involving the international community. Devin Nunes, who stepped aside from the House Intelligence Russia investigation. What's the White House's reaction to that?
This is an investigation that Congress is undertaking. The president has asked that they get to the bottom of some of these things. And so that would be in their court to handle that the way that they deem appropriate.
Cliff Sims, he's special assistant to the president. Thanks for talking with us, Cliff.
You bet. Anytime.
Still to come on the Weekend Roundup.
The battle to fill the Supreme Court ends.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey.
The nomination of Neil M. Gorsuch of Colorado to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is confirmed.
After a more than year-long brutal battle in the Senate over whom to replace the late Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court, the Senate confirmed President Trump's nominee Friday morning. Let's talk about this with correspondent Bill Rakoff here in the Washington Bureau. Bill, what did it take for Republicans to get Gorsuch even confirmed?
Yeah, they had to basically do what Democrats did not want them to do, which was press the so-called nuclear option button. That's exactly what they did. Again, there is some precedent for this at the lower level. Democrats did this a few years ago pertaining to lower court judicial nominees and also for presidential cabinet nominees. So there is a little bit of precedent. Democrats didn't like the fact that they were applying it toward the Supreme Court, but here we were. And what it simply did was it allowed a simple majority to end debate and to proceed to the rule instead of a supermajority, because Republicans just were not going to get enough Democrats on board to reach that magical 60 number.
How does that affect the Senate going forward?
There's a lot of talk about how it's going to affect. Mitch McConnell today said, look, you know, we didn't like the idea of filibustering judicial nominees, and this will get us away from that. And so, therefore, nominees can be considered without that. But there are plenty of others who say that, look, this just makes it easy for a simple majority to confirm, and the Senate as a thoughtful, considerate body where they can come to some bipartisan compromise from time to time. They feel like that by just having a simple majority, then you can push more ideological candidates through, and that might make it a little bit more divisive than what the Senate traditionally has been.
And why did Democrats put up such a big fight in the first place?
Because they did not like the fact that still a lot of raw feelings over Merrick Garland being held up by the Republicans in the final months of the Obama administration. The death of Justice Antonin Scalia about a year or so ago, Merrick Garland was named just a few weeks later, and Republicans refused to hold a hearing. And so, you know, there are long memories on Capitol Hill when it comes to these types of things, and Democrats were furious about it. They were also upset that Judge Gorsuch was less than forthcoming, they felt, in some of the answers that they put to him on judicial questions. However, that seems to have been the way in several past judicial nominees, where the less said, perhaps, the better on the part of the nominee for other people in opposition to hang things on.
CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff on the Weekend Roundup from the Washington Bureau. Hey, Bill, thanks.
Thank you.
Republicans in Congress are holding off on new efforts for a compromise on health care reform until after they return from their spring break in about 2 weeks. It comes after the White House tried to revive talks after a bill to repeal and replace Obamacare failed. More from correspondent Pam Coulter.
There are reports of progress following Vice President Mike Pence's meeting with moderate Republicans known as the Tuesday Group, the Conservative Republican Study Committee, and the Freedom Caucus, whose members played a key role in scuttling the GOP bill to replace Obamacare.
At least 8 people have been arrested as police continue to investigate the suicide bombing Monday in the St. Petersburg, Russia subway system. It killed 13 people and injured dozens of others. More from correspondent Terry Okita.
Authorities evacuated several subway stations before shutting the metro system down completely. Dozens of emergency workers treated victims at the scene and rushed others to the hospital. Russian President Vladimir Putin was in St. Petersburg, Russia's second largest city, on Monday for a meeting with the president of Belarus. He expressed condolences to the victims.
Thousands of people gathered in the city Thursday to commemorate the victims. A special service of hope in Westminster Cathedral took place Wednesday to remember victims of last month's terror attack in London. CBS News correspondent Vicky Barker reports from the British capital.
Prince William and his wife Catherine were there holding lit candles with the rest of the congregation. American Melissa Cochran attended in a wheelchair. She was wounded in the attack that left her husband of 25 years dead.
In this service, the world faiths are represented, and we'll pray together, above all, for the gift of hope.
Royals, faith leaders, first responders, and families of the four victims hearing speaker after speaker affirm that the attack that attempted to divide them has only succeeded in uniting them all against hatred for hope. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
5 people died in that attack. We mentioned earlier about the 100-year anniversary of the U.S. entering World War I. Now, correspondent Gary Nunn looks back.
A hit song 100 years ago designed to motivate young men to enlist to fight in World War I.
Over there.
The United States entered the war after Congress gave then-President Wilson the declaration he had sought. And so it began at age 16. Frank Buckles lied about his age, was an ambulance driver, hearing that was the quickest path to serve. At age 106, he recalled,
I went overseas on the December 1917 on the Carpathia.
More than 100,000 Americans died in the war. Johns Hopkins U professor Elliot Cohen via Skype says many are interred near the battlefields.
The largest American military cemetery in Europe is an American World War I cemetery with over 14,000 fallen soldiers buried there.
Cohen says today Americans tend not to think very much about World War I, which became known as the War to End All Wars. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
The Justice Department is planning for what could be a new crackdown on pot.
All right, so what have we got in here?
This is Super Lemon Haze.
Each year, more than 100,000 marijuana plants are grown, processed, and packaged in this industrial warehouse in Olympia, Washington. And it's all legal.
A lot of people would be surprised to see what a good recreational facility looks like.
Jerry Derevyani is with Northwest Cannabis Solutions, the state's leading pot producer, earning $21 million last year.
I think that a lot of politicians have realized that even if they don't personally like marijuana, that this is the better way forward.
They'd rather have it in a place like this than in back alleys and garages.
Absolutely.
In 2012, Washington became one of the first of 8 states and the District of Columbia to legalize recreational marijuana. It's now a $2 billion business that's raked in $500 million in taxes. But the federal government still puts cannabis in the same category as heroin. And in a departure from the Obama administration, more aggressive enforcement may be coming. Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
I reject the idea that we're going to be better placed if we have more marijuana, and you can just go down to the corner grocery store and get it.
Do you think it's a situation where you could see federal raids here on some of your state legal operations?
That would be deeply troubling.
Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson has already fought President Trump's travel ban and won.
So you're prepared to go toe-to-toe with the Trump administration?
That's an understatement. The Trump administration should respect what states are doing. We're the laboratories of democracy.
But if this multi-state experiment is not accepted at a federal level, the budding marijuana business could soon take a hit. Carter Evans, CBS News, Olympia, Washington.
Up next, are digital lives up for sale?
We're looking at everything that we do online.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Not a good jobs report Friday. The economy added less than 100,000 jobs after months of strong job growth. That's half of what analysts were predicting. Still, the unemployment rate fell to 4.5%. That's a 10-year low. Here's Jill Schlesinger's take. She's our senior business analyst.
I would caution everyone to take this particular report, whether it's job creation or unemployment rate, with a bit of a grain of salt. We really must see what happens next.
You've probably got a general electric bulb in your home right now, but it could be lights out soon for the company's lighting division. Here's CBS's Peter King.
General Electric has been in the light bulb business since the beginning, 125 years ago. Its innovations include the Miser bulb of 1985.
Its advanced design creates light from energy ordinary bulbs waste.
Now the company is reportedly abandoning the product that put it on the map. The Wall Street Journal says GE wants to sell its consumer lighting division and could get $500 million for it. The company's been devoting most of its energy to jet engines, turbines, locomotives, and healthcare equipment. Peter King, CBS News.
Now to internet privacy. After President Trump signed into law legislation that blocks some Obama-era rules from taking effect that would have prevented internet service providers from selling the data of their users. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi told reporters Wednesday it puts the online privacy of Americans up for sale.
All of your most private interactions on the internet not only would be revealed, but could be sold. You are for sale.
Supporters of the legislation, though, say internet service providers already abide by data privacy laws and don't need additional regulations. Let's find out more about what this means with John Chaney Lippold. He's an assistant professor of American culture and digital studies at the University of Michigan, and he's the author of the book, We Are Data, Algorithms and the Making of Our Digital Selves, out next month. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you.
All right, let's start with this law. How valuable is our online data?
I would say that our online data is one of the most important things that we have about ourselves. A lot of people in the internet industry have called our data the fuel and algorithms the combustion engine. So when Nancy Pelosi talks about our ability for us to be sold, whatever, she's really talking about not only our privacy to be invaded, but for a complete commodification of our daily lives.
What data of us is out there?
So it's a really intense thing. If we're looking at the privacy bill that Trump just signed on Monday, we're looking at everything that we do online from the point of our computer. So ISPs have 100% coverage of everything you do. So that includes your GPS location, that includes which apps you're using, that includes which websites you're visiting, and if the websites aren't HTTPS, which means that they're secured through encryption, that means every search term you use, as well as everything that you do on every website.
How much more of internet privacy do you think we're going to be hearing about in terms of addressing this as an issue that affects anyone who's online?
We're going to hear a lot about internet privacy. Privacy is important online for several reasons. We can focus on the ability for embarrassing or private information to become public, but again, that's one of the many reasons why privacy is vital. I would suggest that in the U.S. context, what I said is the right to be let alone, the historical right to privacy, suggests that not only can we close the door when we need privacy, but we also need to be alone to decide who we want to be. So when ISPs join the advertising game, that's completely changing the trajectory of privacy rights and privacy laws. So no longer will we be able to say, I am me, without anybody interfering in me. Rather, it's going to be, I am me, but everybody's going to be watching me, changing my plane ticket prices, changing my hotel prices. And it seems that the Trump administration's deregulatory push is just going to produce more and more barriers to privacy and privacy legislation.
John Chaney Lippold, author of We Are Data. Thanks for talking with the Weekend Roundup.
Thank you again.
Consumer safety groups are petitioning federal regulators to ban a lead compound found in hair dyes. Here's correspondent Anna Werner.
For nearly a decade, Europe and Canada have banned the sale of these same products because they contain lead acetate. And those manufacturers offer consumers in those countries a lead-free alternative. So then why are American consumers still able to purchase these products? If the petition is successful, that may change.
About that much on there.
Richard Gandolf didn't like going gray. So for the past 20 years, the 73-year-old retired civil servant has been using a cream that turns his gray hair dark.
Then take it here, put it here. That's it. I'm done.
He uses a product called Youth Hair.
If it wasn't for Grecian Formula, they'd soon be calling me a gray-haired ball player.
Grecian Formula is another, familiar from those 1980s TV commercials.
But I think the gray's going slowly, gradually, and no one's noticing.
Something the ads don't mention, however, is that both of those products contain an ingredient which can be harmful, especially to children. Lead acetate, a lead compound which the CDC lists as a possible carcinogen.
The amount that's allowed is 10 times higher than
a can of lead paint is what's in this product.
Consumer groups, including the Environmental Defense Fund, are now asking the FDA to get the lead acetate out. EDF's Tom Neltner.
We want FDA to remove its approval for lead acetate as a color additive in hair dyes.
In other words, you can't use this in these products.
Right. So find a safer alternative.
Do not use to color mustache, beard, eyelashes.
Manufacturers of the products tell consumers to only use the dye on their hair, but not all follow directions. This 2014 study documents the case of one man who used progressive hair dye with lead acetate to color his beard and had numbness and tingling in both feet and hands for 7 months. Study author Dr. Wissam Deeb.
He was very surprised that there was lead in his product. Indeed, he stopped the product the moment he discovered that there was lead in it.
But lead acetate is a much bigger concern for children. Government health authorities warn to not allow children to touch hair colored with lead-containing dyes because the compounds can rub off onto their hands and be transferred to their mouths.
When you use it in the real world, it's going to be lead on the soap dispenser, lead on the faucet, lead on the counter, and kids will get exposed to it that way.
The company that owns Grecian formula, Combe, declined an on-camera interview, but told us in a statement that the data on hand-to-mouth transmission of lead is insufficient, and that lead acetate has been used safely as a color additive in progressive hair dye products for decades based on extensive scientific studies.
Now, to be clear, the FDA does currently approve the use of lead acetate in these products. We also reached out to American Industries International, the manufacturer of Youth Hair products, but did not receive a response. Youth Hair does offer a lead-free alternative product here in the United States.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup.
For most boys in Hasidic communities in particular, they tend not to have a high school diploma when they graduate.
Later, science says there's a reason that cannibalism dropped in popularity among our species, and it's not because we don't taste good. Please follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A recent Pew Research Center survey finds growing shifts in the American Jewish community, many choosing to marry outside their faith or not raise their kids Jewish. Yet Orthodox Jewish communities remain an exception. Let's talk with Lonnie Santo. She's head of a unique group called Footsteps. It helps ultra-Orthodox Jews who choose to leave that community. Thanks for talking with us, Lonnie.
Sure. Pleasure to be here.
Lonnie, why do you think Orthodox Jewish communities, especially some of the most devout traditions, have managed to be so protective?
They've set up amazing structures for communal supports and both social and economic supports for people who live in those communities. And so the system, which could be amazingly warm and there for so many people, is a really attractive space for folks. I mean, it's people are just there for each other in really incredible ways.
Tell me about some of the traditions of ultra-Orthodox Jews.
Ultra-Orthodox communities are different. They're not all the same. But by and large, in many of the communities, men will study. Women are often both the primary caretakers in the family and in some communities also the primary breadwinners as well. But ultra-Orthodox communities are really focused around doing good in the world and following God's commandments, the mitzvot.
How do Orthodox Jews approach some sensitive issues like dating, interacting with folks who aren't part of their own communities, and education even?
Yeah, I mean, so dating is not really done. Marriages are arranged in those communities, and you're not really taught to interact with the outside world except for business purposes. So if one is raised in that world, and even if they're in New York City, they're taught to have blinders on. You know, if you're going into the train ride to go into New York to go shopping, then that's fine, but just don't look. Just go take care of what you need to take care of, and then go home. And in terms of education, the secular education is incredibly limited. Access to TV, newspapers, the internet is very limited. And again, it depends on which ultra-Orthodox community someone is in, but the most insular ones really have look down on any contact with secular media outlets, newspapers, and books. And then as you have less insularity, people have more interaction with a secular world. But for most boys in Hasidic communities in particular, they tend not to have a high school diploma when they graduate. And for girls, it depends on the community. Some of them will have a high school diploma, but they have very limited secular education still, and others still don't have a high school diploma as well.
I imagine that's some of the reasons, at least, that folks decide to leave, right?
Well, I mean, the main reasons we see that people decide to leave are really when you have a society that is for puts the collective before the individual, that works for many. So, you know, ultra-Orthodoxy works for many, but it doesn't work for everyone. The people who it doesn't work for are generally highly individualistic thinkers. They're curious about the world. They might not be happy with the roles that are they're supposed to be living as a young woman or a young man in that community and what that means. They might not want their whole life path laid out ahead of them. So for many people, right, knowing what's going to be coming in life is very comforting. For some, that comfort turns into a cage. It, like, doesn't work for them. And so they look for they look to the outside. For some, it's issues of sexual identity, right? There's quite a heteronormative society within ultra-Orthodoxy, and it's not, you know, not acknowledged that people really can be gay, let alone would be allowed to act on those feelings.
So it's hard, I imagine, to leave a community that you've only known for your entire life.
Yeah. And that's why we exist, right? Because that's hard. The hardest thing for people is that it's an incredibly isolating experience, right? If your whole social and economic safety net is right there and you begin to express the doubts that you might have had for a lot of years about the laws or the ideology then or what you are meant to be doing, then in many cases you're shunned. Family relationships will at best be strained. At worst, kids are kicked out of their homes, and or parents who have kids who might lose custody to those kids. So the stakes are very high on the social and familial level, not to even mention the economic level, right? So if someone's whole world is in that community, they're also losing likely their job, which is from within that community. People, we often see people who come to Footsteps get fired from religious jobs, and then they don't have the skills and the know-how, the professional know-how, nor do they have the networks to readily find jobs in the mainstream society.
And what do you do to help then?
So the first thing that we're there for is really for a sense of community, to let people know that they're not alone, that they don't have to be on this journey in isolation, and that our peers that will be there along the way for them. That can't be undervalued in this context, because people are told that if they leave, they'll be drug addicts, whores, tramps, like you name it. And it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy unless they find another way out to leave in a healthier manner. So having that community support there is first and foremost. Secondarily, there are a huge number of an array of services that we offer and provide that very much align to immigrant services. So everything from access to education to job and career readiness, to the important emotional supports that need to be addressed, the mental health issues that could arise from pushing down doubts for all of those years are vital. And then legal resources for people who are fighting for custody and really the right to a relationship with their kids. And we do all of this in partnership with other organizations in New York City. We're not trying to do this alone.
Lonnie Santo, Executive Director of Footsteps, speaking with us on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Lonnie.
Thank you.
Coming up, goodbye to an equal opportunity insult comic.
I'm a Jew and you're an Italian. And here we have what?
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 5656 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 5656.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Legendary comedian Don Rickles died Thursday at his home in L.A. from kidney failure. Correspondent Jim Axelrod takes a look back at the life and laughs of the funny man.
Don Rickles never put the knife in anyone's back.
How much you weigh, big fella?
He hit them right between the eyes.
200 on the left side of your ass, you weigh 200.
An equal opportunity offender. No one was immune from his ridicule.
I wish you wouldn't touch me, Sammy. You people rust.
No race, no religion.
I am a Jew and you're an Italian. And here we have what?
In fact, the bigger they were, the more Rickles loved going after them.
Is this too fast, Ronnie?
Even the President of the United States.
He's sitting there looking at the program going, where does he say he makes fun of me? Where does it say that?
Born 90 years ago in Queens, Don Rickles studied acting after the Navy. He got some bit parts in movies.
I guess it's Area 7, Mr. Bledsoe.
Did you hear the captain read the operation orders?
But short, squat, and balding, he saw his future in nightclubs, not the big screen.
Is that your wife, sir? Jesus Christ. I'll tell you this. Ages three and up. It's on my box. Ages
the later generations, who would know him as Mr. Potato Head in Toy Story.
Gee, I better shave.
May not have appreciated his old-school insult act. But Rickles explained to Charlie Rose he wasn't really hurting anyone.
I don't know how, but I have a knack of making fun of somebody and exaggerating without hurting them and doing it in such a way that they said, oh, that was great, you know.
And according to many who knew him best, the Prince of Put-Down spiel was all an act.
Give me a break. I'm so lonely.
If it's true Don Rickles' jokes were something from another time, there is a quality to the way he made many laugh that is timeless. Jim Axelrod, CBS News, New York.
No longer will companies in New York City be allowed to ask for the salary histories of job applicants. It's the latest effort to close the pay gap between men and women. And on the front lines of that fight, Iceland. More from Michelle Miller in Reykjavik.
23-year-old Melkorka Maria Gudmund's daughter is a carpenter's apprentice. She suspects the men in her trade are paid more for doing the same job.
You don't feel it. But when you see the numbers, it's shocking.
Women in Iceland get paid 14 to 20% less than men. But the government here is trying to close the gender gap with legislation not just demanding equal pay, but requiring employers to prove it.
It's 2017. Now it's time to man up.
Iceland's Prime Minister Bjarni Benediktsson leads the government backing the bill in parliament.
It's about, you know, having people think about it. Have the human resource department set up the pay policy standard and look at the requirements for each and every job so that gender does not, at the end of the day, become the reason for different pay.
So you're making wages more transparent.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's a murky topic worldwide, especially when race is a factor. In the U.S. in 2015, white women earned 75% of what their male counterparts took in, while black women earned just 63% of white male earnings, and Latina women, 54%. Iceland is one of the world's most progressive nations on gender and human rights issues. Equal pay laws have been on the books since 1961. But the country has been slow to close the wage gap.
Our goal is to reach this in 2022.
That soon?
Yeah, that's our ambition.
It takes a long time. It takes years.
70-year-old Gudrun Augustdottir has fought for equal pay most of her life. She helped organize a major strike in 1975. When women in Iceland walked off the job and out of their homes to show their worth to the nation.
People saw that without women's work, the wheel of the country, they did not turn. Everything stood still.
Last October, 40 years later, Frieda Rose Waldemutsdottir joined thousands to repeat that protest for equal wages, striking at 2:38 p.m., the moment in the day they calculate women begin working for free.
You basically did the math.
Yes.
And figured out when you stopped getting paid.
Yes.
Did people get it?
Totally. Women have been fighting for women's rights for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And this is just one milestone. And we just have to keep on fighting.
Now, there are just a few voices of opposition on this bill, arguing that the private sector in particular should be left alone to police itself. The prime minister believes this bill will pass by the end of the year, and he says this could be the blueprint for gender pay equality worldwide.
Michelle Miller reporting from Iceland's capital. You might be missing out on some hidden perks. Correspondent Kenneth Craig explains.
Emily Constantino signed up for Amazon Prime for one reason.
Honestly, for the shipping.
But it turns out Amazon Prime has lots of other freebies besides free shipping that many customers don't know about.
They have so many other perks that they give you. Free music, free movies, free books, all kinds of things that you could take advantage of.
There's also free photo storage and even discounts on diapers.
Many people are also not aware of the hidden benefits right on their phone.
Verizon users can stream the NFL Network, playoff games, and the Super Bowl for free. Sprint customers can watch the NBA plus some other networks. AT&T has a perk that automatically plugs you into free Wi-Fi at any affiliated hotspots like Starbucks, McDonald's, and Barnes & Noble. And T-Mobile users can stream as much music as they wish. Many credit cards come with extra benefits like cash back, rental car insurance, and extended warranties on certain products. And AAA members can get more than just travel perks.
You think of AAA discounts for hotels, for rental cars, but a lot of times you don't think of it as going to a restaurant in the area or going to a store and actually getting 15 or 20% off. So it's a very nice perk.
Finding these benefits just takes a little research.
You really need to do your homework and recognize that there may be other opportunities for you to take advantage of.
Opportunities that could lead to some freebies. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, New York.
Our final story this week, one that might be proof that it's just not worth it for zombies. Good news for those of us still alive.
There may be good reasons for the decline of fine young cannibals among our species. Number one among them, according to the latest research, we're not worth the trouble. Quote, in scientific reports, we're just not very nutritious on a calorie level. Speculation is eating human flesh was driven by some social or cultural factor outside of nutrition. As one paleo expert says, to understand why our ancestors sometimes ate each other, we've got a long way to go. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
We appreciate you listening to the Weekend Roundup. We want to get your feedback. Send us your love letters, recipes, DIY tips, whatever, to weekendroundup at cbsnews.com. You can do an online search to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Dory Valerio helps out in New York. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.